And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 112 of Fans of Power. I am Joel Motto, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. And T-Rex, it's been a few weeks. We're off for Christmas and New Year's, but we're back. And and I'm getting my energy back. I was getting over a cold. But so, how you been doing, man?
Doing good, man. It feels like it's been eons since. The podcast has been up and running. It's amazing how long it feels. It's only been, I mean, we've only missed two episodes, but God, it feels like we missed so much more. When you go every single week, it's
Because it's something we don't do too often. Yeah, you're right. We've been doing this nonstop for almost 2 years. So when you have 2 weeks off, it's like, oh my God, it feels like it's forever. But we got a lot of people here in the chat room. We have Ivan, Third Triumvirate Studios. We got Tom Charlton, JSP. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And Happy New Year to you too, Tom, and everybody that's here. So yeah, it's good to be back. Like I said, we have to do our talking like we always do. So I was gonna say, to start off first, I wanted to say thank you. Tal and I both got a message from a new listener. His name is Brad Collins. And he said, hey guys, he said, just wanted to extend my love for your show. He said he only came across it a couple months ago, and he said he's gone back and listened to all the episodes. He said he works hard, he works long hours in the mines in Australia driving heavy machinery, and he said listen to the Fans of Power or Beyond Retro, he said, makes the days much more bearable. And it was cool for him to reach out, because, like I said, you never know, who you're going to be reaching with the show. And he said he wanted to know maybe what our most prized Masters of the Universe figure or box and Holy Grail, and what's our Holy Grail figure that we might be still chasing. So, I guess I was going to say, first to start off, it's kind of in back of me. I don't know how well you guys can see it, but up on the shelf here, I have that Battle Armor Skeletor Landshark 2-pack. And I guess that's my most, it's weird. I don't know if I want to say it's my most prized Masters possession, but it's definitely the most unexpected, because where I live, the flea markets and everything else never have anything. I mean, there's never no Masters 80s toys or nothing. But I went to a flea market one time, and it was a pop-up vendor that was in there, and he had that that box set for $15. And I mean, I almost collapsed when I see it. I couldn't believe it. It was like, I finally find something, and it's a boxed item. So I don't know if it's my most treasured, but it sure is one of the coolest things. I just love the box art. And, because when you're a kid, when you have the figures already, your parents aren't going to buy you another Battle Armor Skeletor and Landshark just for the pretty box art. They're going to say, you have those items already. So getting that was pretty cool. So that's my item. And I don't know about you, Tyler, but that's, I guess, one of the coolest things I guess I had.
I pretty much had it picked out. I was just trying to think. With He-Man, there's so many particular things that mean a great deal to me. We don't have all the time. We don't have time, but probably my most prized item that I own is the mint on card He-Man.
Oh, yeah.
To have not seen a mint on card He-Man since 1987, which was when I got my first He-Man figure, that was just only in pictures on the internet and magazines and stuff like that. So to pick up what, was my initial first impression, this was how I was introduced to He-Man, was a mint on card He-Man and Skeletor. Don't have Skeletor, but...
When did you come across that?
Oh, it was at the Hills of Flea Market, one of the bigger flea markets on the East Coast. And
is that an 8-pack do you have? Is that an 8-pack right there, or what?
This is the re-release in 1983. This is they got the cross sell art on it. The card art and everything.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
So this was which I'm pretty sure this is what I got as well. I couldn't imagine there being any 8-backs around, which anything's possible in 87. But no, there was a vendor that had set up in this corner area multiple times in the same particular area, and I saw that he had a couple of men on card figures in the back and a He-Man lunchbox. And he said, hey, I got a few more. And he brought out He-Man. And I I brought $300 with me. And I had never in my life spent nowhere near that much at the flea market, period, ever. And I saw that he wanted $300 for it. And I said, and I bought some Spider-Man comics before I came across this guy. I'm like, shit. And I, sorry about the cussing there. I'm just speaking like what I'm thinking. And I told him, I said, this is all I've got. And when I remember when I'm looking at it, I swear he was doing this, what I can only describe as Beavis's laugh from Beavis and Butthead. Like he was kind of gritting his teeth on his lip. as I'm sitting there ogling at this figure, and I told him I've got $2.90. He says, I'll take it. I'll even throw in the He-Man lunchbox for you.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I remember I was there by myself. I didn't have anybody there with me because I wanted to go early that morning. And I was holding on to this in a bag in my backpack and running as if like I had found $2 million in cash and was running my as if like people at the Hills of Flea Market would say, he's got an original, you know, reissue from 1980. Get him, you know.
I know the feeling.
I was gonna put it in the more harder protective case, but the card is slightly bent on the corner here, which I can't put it in there with it. Man, I really dragged the story out, but no.
No, that's a great story, and it's a great figure.
Card is my most prized He-Man possession.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Really quick.
I've got a bunch of others, like my Drew Struzan and He-Man movie poster and a few others I could go on and on about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. First, I want to say real quick to Jake Juggalo. He's in the chat room. Thank you for joining us because it's really late where he's at. I think it's like 3 in the morning, so you might need some sleep, Jake. And that's Jackie Miller.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. And Jackie Miller joined us. Thank you for joining us, Jackie. And no, you know, you're right because like when I found that 2-pack, when it said $15, I mean – I didn't, of course, I never have a lot of money. So when I'm going to the flea market, that's why I'm there. I'm hoping to find some cheap, just dirt cheap, nothing. And I seen that and I was like, oh my God. And so I tried to, you know, come up there, just act like I didn't know what I was talking about, what this was, because I'm just freaking out at it. I didn't know the value of it. I figured, oh, okay, maybe worth $100. And then I go on eBay and I see, I was like, Jesus, it's really expensive. But I mean, it's not so much, like I said, the price. I just thought it was a really cool piece to have, but I was just like, you, I had this. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, you got a bag? He's like, no. I was like, oh, that's okay. So I'm carrying it around. I went to other vendors. I said, maybe just have a bag by chance. And one finally gave it because I wanted to wrap it up. I felt like I stole something. I didn't want nobody to see it. I'm sitting there hiding it because as I walked to one of those other vendors with that, some guy walked by. He's like, hey, where'd you get that? And I was like, oh, it was a guy around that corner right there. I was like, he's doing some stuff. He's selling them around the corner. And I was like, oh, I better get the hell out of here because like, some people are going to be coming. I was actually scared because I was like, man, am I going to get jacked for my 2-pack here, my box set? So that was just a cool piece to get for that. But you're right. There's always so many other pieces. And as for a Holy Grail I want, God, you know, like I said, most of my items were from my childhood, except obviously the 2000X stuff and some of the classics. But all the vintage stuff is basically from my childhood. And I was thinking, like, I don't know what I'd want. You know, I don't know what would be a treasured item. Everybody has their own, you know, idea of what a treasured item could be, whether it could be some really unique piece of, you know, concept art or maybe a rare, weird piece of merchandise. But I don't know. I guess I never really put much thought into it. I don't know about you, but I guess I never really thought, what am I searching
for? Well, given that you've got, you know, what's considered to be the Holy Grail of the He-Man toy line, it's no wonder why Joe's like, gee, you know, I really don't have a Holy Grail. And I've got damn near everything.
No, I don't. There's tons of stuff out there. I mean, there's that cool power tester. You know, like Tom Ace has one of those things. It's that He-Man power tester that they had going around the United States to test your strength. So there's weird items. But, yeah, I guess that's kind of like at least one of my, I guess, a valuable piece. But yeah, I don't know. So yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate, like I said, that he actually, you know, messaged us just like, you know, out of nowhere. I just didn't expect
you to get a chance to give me my Holy Grail. Just because you don't have one doesn't mean I don't have one.
Oh, so what is your Holy Grail?
Normally you would think it'd be the Eternity Play set, and I'd give my left nut if I could have just one of those three towers, because it is so hard to come across anything that I could afford, and it's just one of those things. I don't know if I'll ever be able to get that. However, what in this jogged me, because I was originally thinking the Attorney of Place, and I don't know why I did not think this, because this particular item has been in my life a hell of a lot longer than even the Attorney of Place set. Before I was even aware of that place set, it was the Night Stalker Jitsu 2-pack.
Yeah.
That left an impression on me when I was four, 4 years old, maybe five at the at most, and a K&K toys. And the only time I ever saw Jitsu and Night Stalker in a store, and the only time I ever saw one as a two-pack was on the top shelf of a K&K toy store. And I've seen it a few times on eBay over the years. I would look for it just for fun. And, of course, somebody wants you to sign over your house, your soul, and your firstborn child. And I'm thinking I must be dealing with Rumpelstiltskin on the end of this eBay auction here. So I'm just like, you know what? It's just so cool to know that there are a few out there. But, hell, you do an eBay search right now, you're probably not going to find it much, if at all. It's just that rare. These two-packs or multi-packs in general, I really think that would probably be more of a holy grail than the Eternity Place. It's just because...
Oh, it is. Yeah, just because of value-wise. You're right, value-wise. First, really quick, I want to say Christopher Dahlberg has joined us. Thank you. And then I think the sky has fallen because John Meislewick has actually joined us live in the chat room. He's never joined us for a live one. So thanks, John, for crawling out of the hole to actually say hi. We appreciate it. But, no, you're right. Those two-packs, the box sets, all those. See, when you're a kid, it's just like I said, if you already had the figures, logically, but
I didn't have the figures, so that was I knew of Jitsu. I didn't know of Night Stalker. So to see an evil version of Stridor, which is the only way I could describe him as a kid, in Jitsu, it was, and that was the only two pack I saw. I never saw the you know, like a Buzz Off and Mechanek and Mossman or a Web Store and Skeletor and Stinkor or the what, you know, Manny Faces and Skeletor and Panther. Like, I never saw any of those multi-packs. It was just that one two-pack was the only one I ever saw.
Okay, yeah, because I remember, like I said, seeing them, but there was no logic to get them. I mean, even though, yes, I like the box art, because it was...
Spoiled, you know that?
No.
You just have it at your disposal.
I wasn't spoiled. Like I said, the figures I got were either through Christmas birthday gifts, me doing little neighborhood things to earn money, cutting grass or whatever, scraping nickels. I mean, like I said, and then treating every piece like gold. Every piece that I have in my collection is my childhood figure that I kept and made sure I never destroyed because I knew I wouldn't get another. But when you seen the box set, I always knew, well, I have, you know, Landshark. I have Battle Armor Skeletor. I don't need it. But if we only knew then what we know now, we would have just snatched those suckers up because they're so rare and valuable. Like these crazy three-packs, heroic three-packs.
Yeah.
With, you know, oh, God, I thought, I'm not kidding. I thought I seen like 10 to 20,000 for one of them. I'm like, I don't understand. I don't understand how it could be worth so much money. But damn, if that ever happened, I think I'd collapse because I'd sell.
So you have to remember, too, what these people are charging insane prices for some stuff that you know very well is not worth, you know. The prices for the Eternity Place, I never quite argue with what I see on that. But to have these multi-packs be just as much, if not more, than the Eternity Place set.
Oh, they trump it. I mean, they're just so expensive.
It seems so unreasonable.
But it's because of the rarity.
You know, extreme collector standpoint of like just how rare, which they are rare because you do, like I said, you do an eBay search, you're not going to find many of these multi-packs available online. I mean, it's just cool that you can find pictures of them online through.
And I've seen people pay them. Sometimes you will see some of them. People really do pay the big bucks because, like you said, as collectors, they want absolutely every piece. And since the rarity of those three packs, you know, was pretty scarce to be made, and to have them still in the box, that's what's even rare. Because a lot of the kids who got them ripped those suckers right out of the box, threw the box. They didn't think twice. So to have that still there, yeah, that'd be a doozy. But, yeah, so that's a little bit of our random talking about, like I said, collectors or, you know, holy grails and other things. But, well,
good. Yeah, thanks a lot, Brad, for taking the time to send us that message. That was really, really heartfelt and genuine message you sent to us. And it's good to know that, that people enjoy our discussions about this property and that they can appreciate that, you know, it's there's so much more to this property. You know, it's not just about new toys. It's so deep. I mean, this is like the rabbit hole podcast. You know, it's like we can just show you just how deep this property goes. You know, you just have no idea from the brink of madness with all the stuff from, you know, all over the world and all over this country and
Yeah, we'll hit it from everywhere, from, like you said, to the toys, to the comics, to the cartoon, to everything. And in fact, that's another topic we'll discuss. As many people, if you haven't seen already, Netflix has a new series called The Toys That Made Us. And, you know, they're like discussing Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Barbie, and Masters of the Universe was one of the episodes. So that just popped up, you know, maybe a week or two ago. I can't remember the exact date. But, you know, if you have Netflix and you haven't seen that yet, go see it, because it's an interesting... It's an interesting episode. Well, no. You're laughing already, because I like how it started, because they're going in depth about the creation of Masters of the Universe and He-Man and all the stories you hear from all the people that, you know, were behind the scenes that, you know, you don't know about. But, you know, there's like Roger Sweet, Mark Taylor, and there's plenty of other people that...
Paul Cleland and...
Yes. Yeah. If it, like I said, it really did. I forgot who said it in that episode, but it really does take all of them together to make what happen, because you take any part of somebody out of that equation, you wonder what Masters would have looked like now, how long it could have lasted. Because as you heard the story, you know, Roger Sweet, he took a big Jim figure and he, like, you know, put some, you know, some added sculpting material onto it to buff it up to show some new ideas, which, you know, had Bullet Head, Tank Head, or Tank Top, and then the barbaric warrior who would be called He-Man, as he called it. Now you have Mark Taylor, who did the drawing concepts of everything. His drawings are amazing, you know, came up with Skeletor and everything else. And I know there's always been things, you know, between them throughout the years, as people would say that, you know, they always say, well, who really created He-Man, or who named it? You know, and like I said, it took all of them either way to make it happen. Maybe one came up with the name and some of the sculpting, the other came up with the actual drawing and look of He-Man as we know. But it was a fun series. I mean, a fun episode. Because, I mean, just to hear how Mark Taylor talked about, he's always had the idea of a Skeletor-type creature going to, like, his fairgrounds when he was a kid and going to, like, a carnival. And he went to one of those haunted houses, and dropped in front of him was this, like, dead-looking guy with, like, a kind of rotting skull face, if you will, with still flesh. And it creeped the hell out of him. And he found out years later, when they did a documentary about that, it really was a dead body. It was a dead, mummified, purified, whatever you do to a person to keep the corpse alive. He did see a dead person in front of him. I was like, how creepy is that? And that's how he came up with his idea of Skeletor. Because as you've seen his early drawing, it was more of a kind of a rotted skull face, wasn't it? It wasn't just a skull. Wasn't it kind of like a little rotted skull drawing or something?
He posed body with the skull quite visible, yeah.
Yeah, so there was plenty of cool info at the beginning, like when they're pitching the idea of Masters of the Universe to Child World or something. Oh. Was that? Yeah, and I'll be honest, I never heard of a Child World. We had Toys R Us and Children's Palace. I never heard of Child World, but it was apparently it was apparently the second biggest toy, you know, store chain in the entire United States. And they're pitching the idea and they're thinking it's cool, and they're like, then the people, you know, Child World was like, but okay, so what do kids watch, or what do they have to understand what these figures are, where they come from? And they're like, oh, yeah, we got a comic that's coming with it. Like, it was like right at the spur of the moment, they just had this, you know, they just said it just to kind of like get them to bite. They mentioned, we have a comic that the kids can read. They can find out all about the He-Man's adventures. And then when they finally pitched it to Toys R Us a few weeks later, they said, you know, like, hey, we got a comic. They're like, but you say these are for kids 5 and older. 5-year-old kids can't read a comic. I'm like, oh, you didn't hear about the 2 1-hour specials we're gonna have for a cartoon? And so they just on the spur of the moment are doing things, and, you know, of course they go to, you know, Filmation, Lou Scheimer, and, you know, there goes the cartoon. But I loved hearing that behind the scenes stuff, especially even how they ran out of money to, you know, to make stuff. So they, I think, took like just the Big Jim Tiger, and was it Tony Guerrero? Oh, I don't want to put. Okay.
Yeah, Tony Guerrero. Well,
okay, yeah.
I think it's Tony Guerrero.
Okay, I don't want to butcher his name, but they went to him and they asked him about it, like, you know, here's a tiger, and he's like, well, I don't think the scale's right or something. The guy said, just do it or something, see what you can do. And he took the Big Jim Tiger and he painted him green and put the orange stripes, as just mockingly joking. And I can't remember if it was Paul Cleveland. I'm trying to remember the guy who he was talking to, but he was like, that looks great. And then Tony's like, you know, come on, because he wasn't even taking it serious. And then he was like, but He-Man can't ride. He's like, put a saddle on it. And he came back, you know, I don't know, days later, and they had a saddle and the helmet, and then there's Battle Cat. So through all this crazy stuff and reuses of other toy lines, you get some stuff. But I found the fast, you know, the beginning really fascinating. I didn't flip over as much when it seemed like there was parts where Masters of the Universe was being mocked, which...
Yeah, the minute they start talking about the Filmation cartoon, that's when Patton Oswalt and the narrative of the people behind this particular miniseries of toys is like, now we get to sit there and slam He-Man. It's like, it just... I was biting my tongue and letting Joe praise the positives, because Joe is right. It takes a big nose, because I went back and rewatched this, so that way it would be just as fresh in my head, and thought, maybe after watching it the first time, maybe if I go back and watch it again, it won't have felt like I've just been punched in the stomach and being what or to have watched another modern day mocking of this property that I you know, bleed for, sweat for, you know, it helps me breathe, you know, this property. And to once again see it mocked, made fun of in a variety of ways, as if like these guys who are trying to do this miniseries of praising these very beloved toy lines and properties, it's like, dude, if you want to make jokes, go and create your own show and take your poor, you know, childish and just kind of just flatline jokes. Put them in your own show. But it just always seems like the constant with He-Man and modern day popular culture is to make fun of the property, to say that Skeletor is this dorky, you know, oh, he's cool, he's got a skull for a face, but he's really dorky and you know, unthreatening at all, because he goes meow instead of, like, he doesn't go meow, and it just the whole perception of knocking characters like Extendar, and that everything was just so loopy and crazy. And to be building it up more and more. And then we bring in the movie. And we're going to sit there and tear apart the movie. And say that the movie is part of the reason the toy line failed. And you bring Dolph Lundgren in. And you put one shot of him. Or two shots, technically. To coincide with the conversation with Roger Sweet. Just to slam the movie. It's just like... I just was so mad that... that where they were constantly saying Prince Adam is wimpy and dorky. Because I was portrayed in the cartoon. It's just like... The guys who directed this miniseries, you know, just felt like they didn't watch the show. They don't know much about it. All they know is the toys, getting all the people involved, because we don't have time to actually praise why the toy line and the cartoon worked so well together and why the cartoon was as successful. It's like everybody else, you know. It's unless you're a hardcore He-Man fan, you're in the He-Man fan community. You go to the various websites and Facebook pages and You do your research. It's almost like these guys didn't do their research, you know, other than talking to the guys who were behind it.
Yeah, there was...
And it's like, I get, you don't have time to cover everything about Master of the Universe, because fortunately when we get that documentary that's been in the works for the last few years, maybe hopefully we'll get lucky enough and that will give us a nice in-depth breath of fresh air to cover everything from mini comics to the movie and so on and so forth. But to... Take the Filmation cartoon and just constantly poke holes at it, you know, and make fun of it and kind of talk down on it because it has morals and it was lighthearted. Like, dude, you people didn't watch much of the cartoon at all then, did you? You know, it was just, it just really infuriated me. It's just continuing to push the stereotype that He-Man is beloved but doesn't really hold up that well in the modern, you know, culture, you know? Just like, God, man. You know? And plus, got fans like James Etok, Val Staples, Josh Van Pelt. You know, you got guys who were working and keeping the property alive with various, you know, projects and things like that. But they're not given much time to stress why the cartoon, this toy line, was so memorable and why they do what they do. It's like, no, we don't have time to emphasize why this toy line has stuck with us for so long. No, we got to get in our lame-ass jokes. Oh, look, it's the New Adventures of He-Man figure. And he's got his hair caught on the sword. Isn't it funny, people?
Yeah, there's...
It's just like, God, enough is enough.
Yes, the parts like that were quite annoying. First, I wanted to say hello to Peter Lane in the chat room and also Louis Renzo. They're also in the chat room. Thank you for... Or Renzo, I'm sorry. Louis Renzo, thank you for joining us. But, no, that's... The part that, I guess, kind of bugged me was... Okay. they first started with the toys, then went to the movie. But let's go to the movie perspective. Like when they said, you know, and what came next? Live action Masters of the Universe movie with He-Man, with Skeletor, the guy with the hair. And then it's like, you know, Karg. It's like, okay, why is it when there's something, okay, in the movie, we're seeing somebody new, so it's mocking. Like, okay, did you collect this toy line and realize what everybody else was doing when the toy lines came out? Every year there was new figures, new characters. Sure, I can understand wanting maybe more of the characters and toys that you played with or seen in the cartoon and the movie. But as a kid, I welcomed new characters. Every time you bought the toys, I'm waiting. What's coming out? You never knew. You're like, I have no idea. But when something new came, you were freaking out. So in the movie, there was new characters. I welcomed them. But they were mocking it because, you know, we didn't have Stratos and we didn't have, you know, Beastman, how he should have looked. And there was just a lot of mocking. Then when they mocked the toys themselves, it's like, you're mocking a toy line that is all about fantasy. It's a mix of science fiction, magic, fantasy, futuristic. That's what Masters always has been. So when they're mocking like a figure like Extendar, it's like, okay, then you have, if you want to say AB guy, you got a guy with, you know, a mechanical arm and a iron jaw. It's like, it's fantasy. I never looked at Extendar one time as a kid when he first came out, this guy doesn't belong. It's Masters of the Universe. You have an imagination. You're a kid. He fits in perfectly with all the rest. In fact, when you think about it, you know, if you want to think about fantasy, he's a knight. He looks, to me, he always looked like a big buff knight. And then add upon that, he extends to become the Tower of Power. He was one of my favorite characters to play with as a kid. I always thought of him next to He-Man as one of the strongest guys to go into battle. And then also, like I said, when he'd extend, I even made him an extra ladder at times. For the people that couldn't get over something to extend, they'd climb over, he'd get up there, and he was ready to fight. I don't know, I didn't like the mocking of characters and things. Like you said, all the people that were involved, and there was probably people involved that didn't even get to have their time to shine for that episode, but you got to think about studios. They set up probably a couple hours for lighting, cameras to get you all set up. Then they do a nice interview for an hour to maybe two with you. And then it's clipped down to a total of maybe 45 seconds or less for some people. It's like, you know, I know that they had to condense it. I understand that. But all these documentaries, it's like, I know there's so much more footage. Like, please give us more of what we didn't see, because there's so much more that should have been positive instead of just the joking stuff. You know, I guess if you wanted to mock it,
it probably would have had more time to hear more from the fans who or helping keeping the property alive and other interviews, if they weren't cutting away from all the interviews to show all these segments of a He-Man figure making a sad face, walking around, you know, just, you know, with Patton Oswalt doing his, like, quirky voice, you know. It's just like, God, you know what, this is not funny. You're not doing the service to this property by making fun of it the whole time.
Yeah, there could have been so much more. Because, like I said, it's the toys that made us. And so it's not just the toys that made us from the 80s, but a lot of people became Masters of the Universe fans, whether it could have been from New Adventures or even the 2000X figures. Heck, even some people from Classics. There's a lot of people that joined Masters at different times. And I felt like New Adventures was cut super quick. 2000X figures and MYP, that was like, you know, just basically forgotten.
Yeah, they go along and say, oh, kids didn't want it. They didn't think to mention about the big infant, you know, popular case ratio issue, the fact that Cartoon Network was flip-flopping the time slots, and the Mattel got heavily involved with the second batch with Snake Man. Can't find him here. It just presents to anybody new coming to the fold, which is what I always worry about. Someone who's new remembers it and comes back and they go watch this, and they're going to see that and say, oh, wow, so that's what happened to the He-Man toy line. Patton Oswalt said that happened. Oh, New Adventures? Well, no. Like that. MYP, kids didn't want that either. You know, it was just.
Yeah, I didn't like that part. I didn't like the part when they were doing the MYP.
Well, forget that. Move on to more.
That's what I meant. I didn't like the part with the MYP and 2000X stuff, because you're right. They made it seem like kids weren't interested. Well, I'll tell you what, nephews I had and some of his friends at the time when it was out, they were enjoying the He-Man cartoon and the figures. But like you said, when you have crazy case pack ratios of four He-Man, one Orko, one Man-at-Arms, four Skeletors, one Beastman, one Triclops, and then they start doing that and saturating with He-Man and Skeletor for multiple variants, it's like you're shoving down our throat. So that's why the store pegs start looking clogged. They weren't clogged with Eva Lynn. They weren't clogged with characters like that. It was He-Man and Skeletor because they were making too many. And then the cartoon, you had one time you're watching, then, oh, all of a sudden it's on at night. Oh, wait, it's on Saturday. Oh, we don't know when we have it on. How could anybody get focused to watch it when you don't even know when it's going to be on? So they should have explored and expanded on that instead of making it seem like, kids don't like it, goodbye.
Yeah,
it wasn't enough.
And look, I'd have been happy with, you know, if you guys did your research and you found all these answers and you couldn't fit it in within the allotted time slot of, like, because all these go in at about under an hour, then that's fine. But don't just throw something in and it's completely, you know, nonsense. And you interview one person and, like, okay, that's what that guy said about it. All right, that's what we're going to go with, because we it's really not that important for us to get all the facts, especially when they interview one of the former Mattel execs about the movie, about why the movie didn't work. Not once does the Mattel executive sit there and say, yeah, by the way, we hammered, you know, Cannon and the production crew that you had to meet all these particular requirements of why you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. And then when we realized the toy line was plummeting, we told them they could do whatever they want with the film. Like, they just sit there and say, yeah, it just wasn't that good. It didn't feature any of the characters, you know? It just wasn't that good. And Dolph Lundgren didn't look like He-Man. It's just like, God, yeah. Again, the same damn narrative of saying the movie always sucked because this wasn't in there and it was on Earth, you know? It's like, the information has been out there long enough on the internet, and interviews, documentaries have been published, recorded. There's no reason why information about why the movie, you know, turned out the way that it did should not be common knowledge for people who are wanting to do some sort of research or documentary about He-Man. For this whole stereotype that this movie was like the nail in the coffin for the He-Man toy line to stop. Because it's not fair and it's not true.
No, you're right. And I think it would have been the perfect time because, you know, many fans who maybe haven't read about, you know, all the budget constraints and issues they had for the movie, you know, like you said, they didn't have the money to do what they wanted to do. Maybe if that was, you know, explained in the documentary for those who may have read or maybe haven't heard it somewhere else, it could have been better because that's Netflix. So that's reaching millions of, you're reaching a whole new audience who maybe haven't heard about He-Man in a while and don't
that's
know.
What's the most is that a lot of people see that and they're all going to continue to think the same thing that I want that idea broken and dead and buried.
That's why they really should have said there was money issues. That's why the movie, you know, took place on Earth. It was limited. It wasn't on Eternia. They couldn't do a lot of special effects. They were shut down on the last day. You know, if they could have said all this stuff, and also what William Stout said. William Stout, when we had him on Fans of Power, he said, he's like, it did great in its first week. He said, in the next week, it did better. Remember, he said that it made more money in the next week.
The third week made even more, and then it was pulled from theaters. No, you don't hear anybody pushing that little bit of trivia around.
Right. Which they should have.
It was a flop. That's why the toy line died. Wasn't in it. There was no Battle Cat.
Right. And see, that's why I wish it could have been explained, because he said they didn't have the money to keep it in the theaters, so they had to pull it. But could you picture if they did have the money to keep it in the theaters and it kept making more and more, then it wouldn't have probably been considered such a flop. And the reason Masters went away was just they didn't have the money. So, you know, like I said, it's like, you know, just give them some slack. If only people would have known that. I wish there could have been a little more. I'm hoping that they maybe have more behind-the-scenes stuff or more interviews and things.
I don't know. Maybe they'll do more from these guys. I tried to watch the G.I. Joe one, and I cut that one short too, just because I'm like, great, now they're going to get to Real American Hero, and they're going to be tearing that apart, and yuck, 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 and just making fun of Snake Eyes, and hey, look, it's a ninja, and he can't talk. You know, just...
I didn't watch the G.I. Joe one. Did they mock G.I. Joe too?
I didn't... What I was watching before, and I cut it because I was so upset with the He-Man one, I was like, okay, well, maybe G.I. Joe will be better. And I started watching it, and I hadn't even gotten to where the Real American Hero storyline really starts. And I said, oh, to hell with this, man. I'm not watching any more of this. And I'm not going to watch Star Wars, and I have no reason to watch Barbie. So,
well, I hope they're good. I mean, I haven't watched either of the other ones, but I hope they're good. The one thing that spooked me...
Well, I know I know a lot of people have been posting about it on Facebook and other places. A lot of people really like it. And you know what? I'm glad you do. I wish I liked it as much as they did, too. It just, I take this stuff seriously. I don't like to see that He-Man's constantly being made fun of by people who just don't, who come off as just casual toy fans and not so much hardcore fans, and don't treat it with respect and dignity that I feel that this property deserves, because I think it's well known in the fan community that the cartoon is good. The movie is good. These characters are kick-ass heroes and villains. They're not something that, oh, look at that. He's stupid. He's got two heads and he punches himself in the face. You know,
I was going to say one quick thing. Third Triumvirate Studios in the chat room, he did say the other episodes of The Toys That Made Us, he said they were actually better. He didn't really see a lot of mocking. So, you know, I'll take your word for it, and I'll probably just give him a chance. I wanted to say one quick thing. When they came to the part about She-Ra and, you know, how She-Ra was created, which that was interesting too, and which was good, but they didn't give enough for She-Ra either. There was some woman, I don't know her name, maybe you guys out there will know. Somebody posted a picture. It was the spookiest, weirdest thing I could ever see for a picture in a documentary. There's a woman who, when she's talking about She-Ra during that part of Toys That Made Us, and I think she might be in the Barbie one too, they said. She's talking in the background. She has a chair that's in the background. And it looks like some piece of art where she took a sex doll and turned it into a chair. There is a nude doll in back of her during this shoot. I'm like, what the hell is this here for? And sure enough, somebody screen capped, and if nobody's in the chat room, if you haven't seen that, that is the, why would you have this chair in the background? It almost distracts from you even paying attention to what she's saying. I was like, well, that was spookier in hell. But I just had to bring it up because it is bizarre. So if you want to see something, the goofiest moment in, I guess, Toys That Made Us history, it's this goofy chair in the background, which I can't even explain. But it was during the She-Ra segment. It was, I don't know. I had to say, because it is so bizarre. I don't even know if you've seen it, Tyler. But that was freaky.
I shared a screen cap when it was released, and I saw they tagged you in it. But when I'm watching, all I'm thinking of is trying to hope to God that it's not going to be as bad as I saw it. So no, when I rewatched it today, no, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, it was weird as hell, but also, like I said, I did quite enjoy, like I said at the beginning, I love that behind-the-scenes stuff. It's always juicy. I wish we could have got more and more. And, you know, that's the thing with the documentaries. When you're interviewing so many people, you know when they cut it down, it's just going to be cut, condensed so much, you can't get all the juiciness. It's like, I'm sure that we could have listened to, hell, 45 to an hour a minute, if not longer, of just Roger's tweet.
No, I could have listened to several hours of talking more to
Mark Taylor, Roger Sweet, all of them.
Everybody that was involved with the Mattel line. I mean, I could have sat and listened to several hours of the development and the marketing and all the merchandising, all that stuff I'm fascinated by. I'm not fascinated by just really poor jokes, you know, so.
Yeah, which, like I said, there's always certain parts. But, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I loved the behind-scenes stuff. It was interesting, juicy. Wish we could add more. You never know. Maybe they'll give us more in the future. They can, like, get extended.
I don't want.
Well, I would hope if, like I said, we got more of Mark Taylor and Roger Sweet and all the people that are behind-the-scenes stuff, and maybe more in-depth about the 2000X figures line, maybe New Adventures line, She-Ra, the movie, something a little more. It'd be nice, but... Well, that was that discussion. So, yeah, we had to get that out. And people were just, yeah, Walter Grayskull, thank you for joining us. He's in the chat room as well. So, yeah, they're all going back and forth with what their thoughts were of the show, too, and things that they've seen. So, it seems like pretty much you're...
Reiterate, for people who liked it, I'm glad you did. And I'm not going to... I don't want to, come off as, the angry grandpa back in my day, because I'm younger than Joe. You know, I'm younger than a lot of the He-Man fans. But I take this stuff seriously, and I don't like seeing it mocked and made fun of. But I'm glad for everybody, all the fans that got to participate in this documentary. I'm glad they got to be featured on there.
It's awesome.
I'm sure they had a blast getting to do it. And I'm very happy for everybody that was involved in it. I just and it was good too, because all the fans that were in it, you know, gave good moments. Unfortunately, they didn't get to elaborate much more. And
as I said, it's 45 seconds or less. I feel like maybe there should have been two versions. You know, there was The Toys That Made Us by the people who made the toys, if you will, and then the toys that made us, where it could have been the fans, and showed the fans talking about what Masters has meant to us and all these years and how we became fans and how it impacted our lives. I felt that could have been cool. So, but yeah, so that was that. And well, now we'll kind of move to another quick topic. We discussed this before, but there's the upcoming Netflix She-Ra cartoon that'll be coming out in 2018. And, you know, we heard the information behind, you know, a little bit, like little just blurbs about a description of the type of the show. And then I don't think we did the episode. I mean, I don't think during that episode.
The image was released after our last okay. episode.
Yeah, so there was an image of She-Ra that popped up, one of the storyboard pieces, and it had fans 50-50 going kind of bananas of, you know, whether they loved it, whether they hate it, but it was definitely stated, one of the storyboard artists, Mickey Quinn, I believe is her name, she said that, yes, it's a different version of She-Ra. It's like, you know, this is how it's going to be, it's a different look. She said she likes the old She-Ra, she, I guess, has seen pictures of her, but she said, no, definitely, this is for a new generation. So, you know, it's obviously it's not geared towards us. It'd be nice if it's great to where everybody can enjoy it. But if they're going for a whole new generation of fans, then, hey, that's fine. You know, because we always say, hey, you know, have respect to the people that have kept She-Ra and He-Man alive all these years. So I don't know the direction. I mean, you never know. Maybe when it comes out, it will reach everybody. But they did definitely say it's for a new generation. So if somebody hates it and you hate it, hey, and if you love it, you love it. So I guess we'll find out hopefully in a couple months. More information behind that cartoon.
Yeah, with that being involved, I've just kind of come to terms with, like, and no, I wasn't impressed with how it looked, and for the idea that we haven't seen anything, it's a plain pencil picture with no color, no ink, nothing. I'm like, well, you know, when I saw the Green Goblin in the Spider-Man movie directed by Sam Raimi, the behind the scenes shots that were released leaked on the internet, I'm like, oh my god. And sure enough, Green Goblin was it's not Will Dafoe's fault. It was a god awful costume, especially when you realize what they were going to do originally. So, you know, I just like Joe said, this cartoon's not meant for us adult fans. And you know, I hate seeing, you know, superhero cartoons that are dumbed down and portrayed as moronic. You know, instead of fun adventures like the Batman animated series. You know that the Bruce Timm and Paul Dini worked on. That was meant for kids. It wasn't dumbed down. So why can't children be given the same kind of treatment with superhero shows today? And not that I have no idea what they're going to do with She-Ra. So, but just the simple fact that they're not marketing towards the adult fans as well. I'm like, I'm wiping my hands of it. I hope the new generation enjoys it. I hope for that sake it's successful, but I'm not having a horse in this race and like hoping it's going to be, maybe I'll just keep hoping and hoping and hoping and hoping, you know, maybe Dial a Mug will show up or like, you know what? I'm not worrying about it anymore. Like, I think everybody that came out and said they liked it had the right to think that way. And everybody that came out and trashed that image, I think they had a right to think that as well.
Yeah. It's everybody's opinion. Everybody has a different opinion.
Personally, I didn't like it, but because, you know, I look at She-Ra, I see this very beautiful, striking blonde woman, and this kind of animation takes away a lot of the beauty and specific details of She-Ra. Even though it's one image, you kind of feel like that kind of animation takes away a lot of the details. Even a penciled drawing from Filmation at least accentuates She-Ra's beauty, you know. And I like looking at beautiful women, and She-Ra and her friends are all beautiful women, and I feel like with this kind of animation, it's going to take away a lot of that attention to detail, because that's what animation is today. Animation today doesn't have a whole lot of details. It's lacking in details and for a lot of it. And I don't know everything about animation. I just know that a certain look, it's not really for me. And this, it's not for me. They've already said it's not meant for us. So I'm not worrying about it. I'm not going to stress myself out as much as I stress myself on this podcast and raise my blood pressure over things. This is one thing I'm not going to allow myself to get upset about.
Yeah. So I you can definitely just hope for the best, and I'm sure we'll be finding out more bit by bit, you know, throughout the months. I'm sure they'll be giving us a little taste of maybe a colored image and eventually maybe some voice clips, maybe a little bit of animation. So it'll be interesting. We'll have to see how that comes. And also want to say hello to AC Kelshaw in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. So Yeah, so that's Dantan Shira. So, again, hoping for the best. Now, was there anything else that you want to mention, Tyler, before we get into a very good mini-comic?
Not that I can think of. Is there something that I'm forgetting?
No, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if there was anything you had on your head.
Let me make an adjustment here. I'll be right back.
Okay. You go ahead, and while you make the adjustment, I will. All right. No, so, yeah, so.
I'm still, I talk to you.
Oh, okay. All right. No, yeah, that's why I figured then we'll be getting into our mini comic here. And that mini comic, of course, is the one that I got with Eternia playset, which is the Ultimate Battleground. Now, I know I think there might be some rare, I don't know if it was Mosquito or some of that wave that Mosquito came out. I think the Ultimate Battleground might be packed with very few figures as an as a variant comic instead of the regular comic that came with it. Some of those had the Ultimate Battleground. Otherwise, you could only get the Ultimate Battleground with the Eternia playset. So, do you remember? Was it Mosquito? And I can't remember else, but I knew Mosquito.
Or it was. You know, there's always that chance it was packed with another figure because I've got a Men on Card Blade that comes with the Powers of Grayskull mini comic. You know, I'm sure maybe there's a Men on Card King Randor that comes with, you know, the Ultimate Battleground, or maybe there's a Squeeze. I mean, but yeah, Mosquito is the only other one that comes to mind.
Yeah, and just like, no, definitely what JSP said in the chat room, he says, an expensive mini comic to get, and correct, because
Jeez.
Yeah, since the majority of them came with just Eternia, and that's the only way you could get it.
The Holy Bible, like, you know, like this right here, where you can use the New Testament here, and you can open up to that wonderful story itself in this Holy Bible of humanity.
Yeah, because you can get, well, that's the thing, you could get that book with all the comics for less than the price of the actual Ultimate Battleground mini comic. That thing goes from sometimes $60 to $100 by itself. It's insane, the cost of that. So, yeah, since that book came out, yeah, you can get it much cheaper, and you don't have to worry about wrecking the condition of your original comic if you do have it, because I don't like opening mine and touching it anymore, because I don't want to wreck it.
Yeah, that's something, if I had it, it would have to go in a special frame. And I would put it on display because that's not something I would. I mean, it sucks too, because at least with this, I know I can come and grab it and look at it as much as I want. With an original copy, that I wouldn't want to take it out because it's so rare and just, you know, it's this is honestly more fun to have a copy like this that I can just turn to anytime I want, or you can go online and read it. You know, this is the best way to go. I mean, because I'm just at the point, I'm like, you know what? I don't want to spend any more money than I have to. It'd be nice to have it, but honestly, it's just fun to come and just open it up right here.
Oh, it is. It is. And Christopher Dahlberg in the chat room was wondering if we ever reviewed the newspaper comic strip book. I think we discussed.
Yeah, we discussed when Danielle was on it, but that was before the book was actually released.
Right. So no, we haven't, but we'll eventually get into that someday, because that's a whopper of a book itself with all those strips that are in there.
That's that too.
Yeah, definitely. But this comic, I mean, well, my first impression was when I got the Eternia play set, you know, as for a Christmas gift. And of course, beyond going insane for the Eternia play set when I had it, that mini comic, it was so cool because I could read the mini comic and try to understand the names and what things could do. So as I'm reading what's going on there, it's like, I can reenact this with my Eternia playset and try to, like, you know, you're a kid, you're trying to use your imagination. So it was fun to see this in action because now everything's so close. It's like, you know how they always displayed the Eternia playset when you see in posters and other things, you got, you know, the Grayskull Tower, Viper Tower, Central Tower, and right off to the side, you can have your Castle Grayskull next to it and Snake Mountain. So we start seeing them in comics and stuff. They try to have, here's Castle Grayskull, here's Snake Mountain, like they're close, even though they've never been that close ever before.
It was an interesting concept but I almost look at it as it's done that way so that when kids are playing with these playsets, they know how to set up the world of Eternia, which I feel like people are missing that point.
Yeah.
You know, and from a child's imagination, you're kind of led to believe that even though you're sitting next to each other, it's supposed to be a long journey to get to all of them, you know? But it's, I just think it looks cool. I mean, that.
I understand the purpose. Yeah, I
get it too, and I feel like a lot of fans don't quite get that, or they don't see that.
Yeah, I think if you were just to read the comic or see even other comics where it's, you know, it might kind of think, wait, what's going on? But when you understood of how it was sold as a toy in the context of what they meant, then you understand of why they're making it look like that. Because, you know, you could hook Castle Grayskull to where it like connects with Grayskull Tower, and then Viper Tower and Snake Mountain could kind of like connect. So it makes a great display as toys. So yeah, they try to implement it. But the story, it is a fun story because, you know, King Hiss, you know, you find out obviously the Eternia, the three towers, you know, those were way back in the times of King Hiss, and they hold great power. You know, there's all the evil in one, all the good in the other, but Central Tower has both. And it's like, if you control Central Tower, you have all the power of good and evil. And the elders back then, I don't know if they called them the elders. I'm trying to remember what they were exactly name dropped as, but they're the ones that had the towers.
They refer to them as the Ancients in this, yeah.
Okay, the Ancients, yeah. They're the ones that had the towers and then, you know, like sink into the ground to make sure nobody gets the power, especially King Hiss, because then they even banished King Hiss. But King Hiss, it starts off basically, there's an earthquake, which I always, even as a kid, I was a smart aleck just with that part. I love the comic, but I always thought, earthquake, they're in Eternia. Shouldn't it be an Eternia quake? But that was just me being a little... Yeah, it was. I was a little dork kid. I was a punk. I always hated that part. And Joe, that's like, but Earth has earthquakes. This is Eternia. It shouldn't be an Eternia quake. It was a pet peeve of mine as a kid. But anyway, so it starts off with an earthquake. They're having the earthquake. The villagers are, you know, having their houses, you know, falling apart. You're seeing Extendar and He-Man, and I think even Rio Blast are trying to help these villagers.
And yeah, there's one panel of Extendar holding what appears to be a beautiful woman in his arms. And she's like, she's looking so... like, she's into this guy. I'm like, God, man, you know, what a mess.
Exactly. Did you notice he disappeared for, like, a couple panels and came back later? He was adjusting his belt. Like, what happened? No. But anyways, so you find out that the reason this is happening is King Hiss and Skeletor are using their combined powers to raise the three towers once again. And, of course, you know, with, like, thought bubbles, they're basically going to turn on each other once they get the power. Don't they both have the same comment that they said or something?
I mean, King Hiss tells him that, you know, like, hey, I'm sorry. He's thinking to himself that, you know, it's a shame I forgot to tell him about all the danger that goes on, you know, because this is something that King Hiss is very well versed in, how this entire environment is set.
But Skeletor senses that. That's what I like. Skeletor knew there's a trap or something, right?
Yeah, which is why, you know, like he says here, you know, he's going to take Tongue Lasher, and of course Rattler goes with him. So, and of course he sends Tongue Lasher into Central Tower first to kind of check it out, and of course it comes alive and grabs a hold of him, puts him in the mouth of Central Tower, and allows Skeletor to pass through. So it's, but I like that the writers continued on with this. Waiting to backstab, but they still help each other. Partnership between Skeletor and King Hiss, which is what I missed in NYP. I just thought this was such a great dynamic that these two will work together. What their ultimate goal is to not take out the other, no matter what. But they will work together in the back of the mind. I mean, it's just brilliant that they really kept up. That storyline. I mean, it went through. I mean, it's even though in Snake Attack they're not plotting against each other, Tongue Lash and Rattler hate Skeletor. King of the Snake Man, it's like, yeah, you know, when all of Eternity's mine, I'll take you out next. You know, it's just fun that they kept it up. The continuity, you know, it's important, and it's really cool that they did that.
It is, and it's also great. I love all the things that were being.
You were right, Joe. I missed the panel you're talking about. Yes. When they're raising the towers, they're both looking at each other like, God, I'm going to kill you when it's all over.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, okay, yeah, we can do this, but yeah, I'm going to take you out. That's all they're thinking about is, once I get the power, you're done, because
just come out and tell me I made a mistake. You know, don't allow me to sit there and denounce you with knowing full well that I goofed.
No, that's right, man. So, well, anyways, Sorceress, you know, calls He-Man to Castle Grayskull, lets her know of, you know, these, you know, she tells him about what happened in the past, and then is now telling him what is going on. So he has to race off from Castle Grayskull to go to, you know, the, you know, Wait, I'm sorry. No, wait. Did he? Wait, first he flew by the towers, went to Castle Grayskull, because I forgot what he went by.
Yeah, on the jet sled. Don't get to say that you used the whole
thing. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, because that's all the things you see. You see the jet sled. And then doesn't he shoot out on the laser bolt? Was he on the laser bolt when he left
Castle Grayskull in the laser bolt?
Yeah, so you're just like, dang, you got the laser bolt. And then you see Snoutspot pop up later to save He-Man and the Blaster Hawk using the Blaster Hawk's discs to...
They do a lot of good product placement in this mini-comic. Like, even though it's like, you know, the casual Joe Amato would say, why is he using the laser bolt when he showed up in the jet sled? That doesn't make any sense. No,
but it was cool. They were giving you everything. Of course, their product placement.
The 1986 wave is pretty well represented with Rio Blast, Extend Orange, Snoutsmelt being the prime heroes of that wave. They're featured prominently in this book, along with the vehicles and the big playsets.
Yeah, and like I said, even Extendar. But then we got to see He-Man using the Battle Tram, which is the item that goes around the track. So, I mean, they're showing plenty of stuff. I mean, you even got to see kind of like the gimmick of the Grayskull Tower. You know, like if somebody's there and you go across the battle tram and it hits the switch, it would trap somebody in a dungeon. So yeah, I think Rattlore's standing there just waiting, standing around, and here comes He-Man, and I think Rattlore's like, you're gonna get past me, and basically He-Man just knocks him right in there, shuts him into the jail cell like he's absolutely nothing. But then Skeletor, he starts getting a lot of power. He's in Central Tower, and he's getting super strong. Now he knows what this is about, and now he knows, hey, I'm going to use this power, and he gets up on to the one, it's like a firing mechanism. I forgot what they called the exact name of it from the Attorney.
Laser Blast.
Okay, yeah, thank you. The Laser Blast. He gets in that and charges that up to, you know, obviously shoot at He-Man. And of course, like I said, Snoutspot comes and saves his day, drops He-Man off right, I think, in Central Tower, and then he was like, yeah, now I'm ready for you, He-Man, however Skeletor says it. But then he gets strong too, because it amplified his power, which he, you know, Skeletor was not expecting. So you picture He-Man, who's already the strongest man in the universe, has now gotten stronger, now gonna take out Skeletor. But it had a lot of good action, back and forth stuff into it, and tons of the accessories and things that as a kid would make you say, I need that, I need that, I need that, but still keeping it a fun story to where how it ends, it's basically, I thought He-Man tells Snouts, I think it's Snoutspot, tells him to go back to, you know, the palace. You know, we're getting ready for some wars, and then it kind of ends, which holds you off to going into maybe, I don't know, Search for Keldor, whatever you want to say. There's other comics that you could think, hey, here's three towers.
You got Hordak, The Search for Keldor, Revenge of the Snake Man, all those mini comics. They all use the Eternity playset as a, you know, a battleground, or, you know, Hordak's after it, or the Snake Men are residing in the Viper Tower. I mean, it becomes the current battleground for a lot of the upcoming stories. It's used in the Cosmic Key, you know, in that little short, you know, silly story.
Yeah, what, 5 pages, the shortest comic in history or something?
But it's, I mean, I really, there's certain things about this. Like, I, you know, because when I remember being so engrossed at what it looked like from behind the Eternia playset, and finally seeing what it was like. And I think Joe even told me when we first became buds what Viper Tower was like. And there's nothing in there. But when you look at this, it looks like this awesome technological, you know, spy network. You know,
yeah,
that setup that you the head rotates like a big periscope, mm-hmm, to check out the surrounding areas, and of course the toy itself is you can maybe put one figure up in that little tower, and that's about it.
Yeah,
but it really illustrates that, you know, man, this playset is the ultimate of ultimate playsets. I mean, it's the playset itself may not be as extravagant as this mini comic and other illustrations would have it be, but
well, you know, in aspects
help intensify your imagination. You know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why it helps build to it. Because, yeah, when you look at Viper Tower, there's just the thing you turn, which makes the head go around for Viper Tower like it's a periscope. So you understand the context when you read the mini comic. In Grayskull Tower, it's basically, yes, that was the least, I guess, you know, appealing of like, wow, what can it do? It's like you get trapped in it. It's like, I wish there could have been more in depth.
Function. The Viper Tower doesn't do anything except move the head around, and even that, it's
yeah, that's, I mean, it's in the comic
this can fit in there and you're pretending that he's looking around. At least with the Grayskull Tower is a jail, you know?
You're right. It has a purpose, but it's like, at least in the mini comic, you see what is supposed to be in Viper Tower. Like you said, electronics and things. So you're imagining that as you're playing with the kid. But Grayskull Tower, it's like, jail. But then you come to Central Tower, and as a kid, holy Jesus, yes, I did play in the back of Central Tower a ton. I mean, it just, there's a lot going on that part of the playset, and not to mention, of course, the track itself, just watching the things go around, you know, the actual track and in motion. So it made it so...
That was as fast as me the most about this, but when I see illustrations, when I see He-Man riding the Battle Tram and all the other mini-comics, I'm like, that is just so cool.
It was.
Just this quick ride, and I'm always under the impression that from a imagination standpoint, that it takes a long time to get around to everything, you know, because obviously you can clearly walk out of Central Tower and just walk next door to Viper Tower Grayskull. But the point of the Battle Tram is like, it's like, you have to take that to get you there quicker as opposed to walking around, you know.
And what's fun about the playset, first I want to mention one thing about the mini comic, then I'll get back to the playset, but also He-Man in that story, you know, he's concerned that that power, that if Skeletor was to get his other evil warriors there, it would increase all their powers. That's the frightening thing about this. These three towers, especially Central Tower, is the power that can be acquired. You know, if evil gets hold of it, that's not going to be a good thing. It's a new place to defend. So, I mean, great story. But as for back to that playset, that is what's fun. Is like, you know, like I said, you had, it's basically like a, just a big giant going around, almost like a figure eight in some aspects, but beyond that, around there. But it does go at a pace where I remember as a kid, like speaking of Grayskull Tower, as the thing was starting going on one part of the track, I remember I'd engage with He-Man or whoever else fighting that evil warrior and then just pushing them, you know, as the figures, you just push them into the Grayskull Tower. And then here came like the thing around the set.
Yeah.
It clipped that off and boom, shut it. So it was good pacing of that. It had its little hidden area where the gargoyle was, where you can hide items. That's where I used to hide the money from my brother because he was always wanting to take my money. So I hid it in the playset, never found it there. Just a quick side rant. And then I used to fill up the moat. I like taking the moat and taking the slime from the slime pit or slime that you would get in the gumball machines for 25 cents. And I try to fill up the moat for Castle Grayskull with slime. God,
we're so destructive of this, you know, incredible design and toy, throwing you cheap 25 cent slime from Kmart quarter machine.
It was, and it got gooky. It got gooky and brown and nasty, but I used to fill that moat and throw other weapons in there and have warriors getting trapped. So just a very fun playset. And yeah, and well, let me see. Tom Charlton said the USSS flag is his dream of Star Wars destroyer set. Because JSP said, I will say as impressive as it is, it's no USSS flag. Oh, I never had, was that G.I. Joe? I think that was G.I. Joe. Yeah. And I never.
I will say that for those guys, though, the Defiant would be my USS flag for the G.I. Joe line, because I found that to be as big and damn as impressive as the USS flag is. The Defiant was always my particular favorite of the G.I. Joe places as like the be-all Ultimates. But I mean,
yeah, I never had
number one. I mean, I would be so thankful just to own one of those three towers. Like, it's going to be impossible. I kind of realize at this point. I mean, the money, you know, it's hard to have an extra $400 or $500 to put down. And if I got it, I would want it complete. I wouldn't want, unless I was at a flea market and a guy was selling it right there on the spot, I would buy it incomplete. But if you're going to go on eBay or buy it from a dealer, you want to buy it complete, you know, essentially. And it's just one of those things, man. I'm just kind of, I don't lose sleep over it because I feel like it's just not going to happen, you know. Yep, but I would be thankful just to have Viper Tower or Grayskull Tower to set up somewhere in my collection, just to say I am part of the playset.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'll happen someday. I can probably guarantee that somewhere it'll pop up cheap. You might be at a flea market, and there might just be a part, and you never know. It could build slowly. But every toy line always has what you want to say is their one big piece. I mean, hell, the Sectars. I never owned the Hive, but I know the Hive is gigantic.
It's pretty big. I mean, from that to Fort Carium to the Marvel Superheroes Training Center, the box art always makes it look a lot more grandiose than when you actually look at Google Images and see, not as cool as I thought it would. But you have to look also remember from the perspective of a child that it would have been awesome. But I mean, honestly, for the most part, though, I'd say 95% of the playsets that came out in the '80s were all kick-ass.
Oh,
people
yeah.
sit there and nitpick about Grayskull and or Grayskull and Snake Mountain and say that they're not that elaborate. I'm like, you don't get it, do you? You know, it's the playset. They're not supposed to be these technological, you know, evolutionary pieces of plastic. They're meant for kids to use their imagination and enact the traps and come up with extra stuff that, you know, that they couldn't afford to put in the playsets. And
it's still very amazing. And plus, you think of Snake Mountain and Castle Grayskull. I mean, not only castles, but they doubled for a carrying case for your figures. You can put your kit, you know, figures in there, close it up, and go to your buddy's house, pop them open, all the figures. Let's play and use our imagination. So, yeah, you can only hope kids could someday get that again to play with toys, having certain ways of using their imagination with things like that. But you never know with video games and other stuff. I don't know if that magic will come back. It could.
Well, that's why we have to keep it alive and encourage the parents who still like He-Man and She-Ra to coax your kids into using their imagination, introduce them to these characters, or introduce them to G.I. Joe and Turtles and Brave Star and Silverhawks, Thundercats, you know, Dino Riders. You know, don't let them fall victim to the all powerful cell phone. You
yeah.
know, where everything is, you know, Candy Crush and Angry Birds or whatever it is that kids play nowadays.
Definitely. And oh, Grim Dagon, I didn't know if I gave a shout out to you. You see you in the chat room, but yeah, thank you for joining us. I don't know how long you've been here, because when we get to rant, sometimes I might not be looking at everything that's going on in the chat room. But if I didn't shout out to you, there you go. And I appreciate you being here for however long you've been here. But, well, that's it for the Ultimate Battleground, then, Mini Comics. So I think, that probably will wrap up this episode. So, Tyler, if you have closing thoughts, go ahead and do that. I'm surprised I lasted this long and my voice did, because I
told you. Yeah, we have two people. Joe's still not feeling too good. So we're not going to go as long as we normally would here. We got to save Joe's body and get him ready for next week's episode as well. Closing thoughts, it feels good to be back talking He-Man. I look forward to what 2018 holds in store for us, from news from Super 7, and who knows, we'll have some cool news at San Diego this year, who knows. Don't really have anything particular to say. I want to thank everybody that joined us in the chat room. I want to thank everybody that continues to listen to this podcast, whether you're new and you're going back to the back catalog, you come across this episode, I want to thank you personally. And for people that have stuck with us from the beginning or from a year ago, 6 months ago, I appreciate everybody taking time to download the episode or watch us on YouTube, that you're devoting time out of your day, whether it's at work or on the drive home, to listen to us and not Joe Rogan or something like that, you know. So I appreciate everybody appreciating what we do and enjoying it. Whether you don't say anything or you do say something, we appreciate you opening your ears up to us. So no. That's my closing thoughts. No recommendations. I'll get back to doing some trivia contests next week. Give away some more Leech Mini Comics and stuff like that. So I'm just glad to be back. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be talking He-Man. So
it is. It's going to be back. Like I said, those 2 weeks felt like it was just months and months. So it is great to be back. And yeah, I should hope I will be 100% by next week. Like I said, I'm about 80% right now. Like I said, it was just a horrible flu bug just hitting the area where I live and just going around. It seems like the entire United States. But I rarely get sick, but that son of a gun got me. So just I was running a little bit low on energy. But yes. I just want to thank every single person that was in the chat room. It's always a blast having you. I love all the participation, the questions, the topics you were bringing up, interaction. It's always appreciated. And, you know, hope, of course, you know, you enjoyed what you heard today. But let me just say what I always say before my voice goes. Go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
And go to He-Man.org as well. And I will close out with my quote of, it's not her you want, it's me. It's always been between us.
Oh my God, I feel like I just watched this. How could I not know?
You mean you just, you know, slap you across the face here, man, if you don't get this one.
I'm like, God, wait a second. How could I? Hey, man, I ain't feeling good. I ain't right. But at first, I want to say, yeah, thanks, JSP, for saying hope you feel better and everybody else. I appreciate that. But
Yes.
see,
I'm sorry. I cannot excuse you, flu or not, if you do not get this quote before we close out.
how the hell don't I know this? I probably just watched this. Oh, man, I wait, it's not. It's. Oh man, I hate it. I'm gonna punk out and I'm not gonna do it. And you're gonna kick me in the. I don't know it. Damn.
This is worse than you not getting Shelley's quote from Friday the 13th, Part 3.
It's a horror movie?
No, it's worse than that, though.
It's worse than that.
If you cannot get this quote, I mean, that's it. Game over. You must remove the mask and turn it over to me.
Gonna have to. I don't know. Wait. It's. Damn it, I don't know, man. Oh, damn it.
Posters do I have looking in front of me right now?
You're looking at He-Man posters? Oh, wait, that was what He-Man said to the Skeletor about the sorceress. Oh, my God. Whew. Hey, everybody in chat.
Wah.
Hey, everybody in chat room. I did get that. It took a
No,
bit.
he didn't get that. He got it after I told him what movie poster am I looking at here. If only we had the Price is Right loser game show
Well,
sound.
I didn't know who he was talking to, what it was about. Oh man, I'm not feeling good, guys. Well,
Some movies, if I quote The Burbs, you're gonna sit there and say, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Like
shit.
the Yo Rumsfeld is like, is that from Dirty Dancing?
Oh, I just disappointed everybody in the chat room. And Jackie Miller said, "Now I gotta remove the mask. Now I can't do it." But you got me, Tyler. You got me. I'm a moron. But again, thanks everyone for joining us. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.